Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 52, recorded Friday, March 2nd, 2007. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: flying in friendless skies, and travel tech, finding speed on the road. Coming to you this week from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, I've been bouncing back and forth between the coasts a bit since the last episode. San Francisco to Orlando one week, San Francisco to New York the next. The San Francisco to New York run, I gotta tell you, that one ragged me out a bit. I caught the first flight out of the Bay Area to Oakland that Tuesday night. It was snowing in Chicago, which meant a delay. Nothing too bad, but we kept sitting. Finally, the captain came on. We were waiting for the first officer. His arriving plane was supposed to pull into the gate next to us, but delays in de-icing the departing plane meant that his couldn't pull in, and, of course, there were no empty gates. So we sat and waited until United managed to scrounge up a gate. So instead of getting into Oakland at 11 p.m., we got in at 1 a.m. after the obligatory 10-minute wait to find someone to come open the door. I mean, you know, we've been in the air for 4 hours. How much of a surprise could our arrival have been? And I still had to pick up a rental car and drive 30 minutes to the San Francisco Airport Marriott. On Wednesday afternoon, I flew from San Francisco to JFK, completely full plane, arrived at 12:30 p.m., 30 minutes, or I guess that's a.m., 30 minutes after midnight, and stayed in the, I'll tell you, not as bad as I feared, JFK courtyard. Had meetings Thursday in North Jersey, and after 3 hours on the New York Thruway, Albany, New York. Finished up too late to make the last direct flight home from Albany, so I had to connect to the 10 p.m. flight through Washington Dulles, which meant I got home around midnight. Made this week's trip to Las Vegas feel pretty light. And while in Vegas, I got one of the best phone calls I've had so far this year. My trip to Hong Kong got canceled. Now, a lot of folks, including my wife, thought I'd be excited about going to Hong Kong, a new place for me. She was also excited about souvenirs I might bring back. But I'll tell you, because of family and other business commitments, it was going to be a 4-day up and back. Leave Sunday morning, return Thursday morning. And of the 2 days in Hong Kong, all but 4 hours would be spent in a hotel meeting room. I used to do these sorts of trips to Europe all the time. The 7-hour time difference between Chicago and, say, Stockholm is one thing, but doubling that to 14 hours, you know, that's something I'm looking forward to. So with that trip blown up, this week is looking pretty light, having up and back to Indianapolis, which I'll drive. Longtime listeners will remember the fly versus drive calculus I walked through in Travel Commons number 23 for this same trip, the Chicago to Indy. On that trip, I drove down from Chicago that morning. The other guys in the meeting flew in the night before. Returning, I did it in 3 hours. Because of a huge thunderstorm, the other guys also drove back, but after waiting in the airport for about 2.5 hours for their flight to be canceled. Following up, lots of good commentary on the website and the email bag since the last podcast. Drew Leifheit of the Budacast podcast started a thread of commentary on Amsterdam Schiphol Airport. Drew says, you know, not only do I really appreciate the chaise lounge sleeping area and the ubiquitous mind your step voice on the people conveyor belts in Schiphol, but have also recently discovered an art museum right in the airport. What a wonderful novelty to gaze at a Rembrandt and soak up a little history while waiting for your next flight. Leo Vigoda agrees, but says the one thing that really bugs me is that none of the stores at Schiphol are allowed to sell chewing gum. Now, I've always liked Schiphol, big enough that there are things to do on your layover, though I didn't quite catch the Rembrandts that Drew mentions, but not so big that it's, you know, sort of a sprawling madhouse of buses and trains and security lines that Heathrow's become. My wife's mother and aunt connect through Schiphol all the time when they fly from Chicago to Budapest and have never had a problem. And by the way, thanks to Drew for the link to the Travel Commons website from his interview with the Hungarian newspaper, Népszabadság. There we go. God, had a big one of those long Hungarian words. Scanning my weblog from my hotel room in Vegas this past week, I should have been working, but well, saw some inbound traffic from a Hungarian URL. I clicked over to it, and there was a picture of Drew pointing a very large microphone into someone's face. I searched, but I couldn't find the reference to Travel Commons. But I did notice one hyperlink was a different color, indicating, where it was pointing to, I had recently visited. The linked word, here we go again, geez, pointed to Travel Commons. Given that my Hungarian vocabulary, as I think I have now completely demonstrated, is pretty much limited to nouns describing food and alcohol, and the associated verbs meaning that I want and could I please have, I had no idea what utazashrol meant. Luckily, my wife was still awake and online, which allowed me then to IM her, as opposed to having to pronounce it over the phone, which meant I could just copy and paste it into the Yahoo Instant Messenger screen. As you might guess, that word that I can't pronounce, but will be in the show notes, is about travel. So I guess Drew had given them Travel Commons as an example of a travel podcast. Anyhow, thanks to Drew for the mention, and for all the Hungarian readers out there who are just like, their ears are bleeding from me butchering their language, I'll put a link to the article in the show notes. And then there was Bob Fennerty's insightful comment to a post about Orlando Airport's use of the new shoe scanner as a replacement for the shoe carnival. Bob wrote, "I'm really glad that Richard Reed wasn't the underwear bomber. Security lines would be longer and more embarrassing, but probably more fun to watch." Well, I'll tell you, no more embarrassing than for the guy in front of me in a TSA line a couple of Mondays ago. He's a pretty buttoned-down guy. Looked like he could have been an auditor for Deloitte or PwC. And so he dutifully pulls out his clear Ziploc, quart-sized Ziploc bag of toiletries and places it on top of his coat in the gray bin. What he didn't notice was that his tube of Preparation H hemorrhoid cream was on the top, label side up, broadcasting an ailment that he probably would prefer to keep quiet. As he grabbed the bin to push it into the x-ray machine, he saw the label, quickly flipped over the bag, and fixed his eyes straight ahead. I'm sure that he was thinking that this is a hell of a way to start the week. Anyway, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler, the email address, comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. Or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. There you go, a little Nouvelle Fado from Anamar. Fado, a traditional Portuguese music, sort of melancholy songs of love, longing, loss. Perfect bridge music for our first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the friendless skies of United. United Airlines has had a tough run of it lately. You could trundle out the old "now is the winter of our discontent" quote from Shakespeare, and you wouldn't be too far off. Winter storms in December at their hubs in Chicago and Denver caused the cancellation of 3,900 flights in the ice storms last weekend, led to cancellation of 1,500 more out of Chicago and Washington Dulles. The December storms drove United's Q4 bottom line back down into the red just after they had managed to eke their way out of Chapter 11. And I'll tell you, no one expects Q1 to be much better. The financial impact, though, is probably the least important. Yes, it drove the stock price down for a while and probably impacted a couple of hundred year-end bonuses, but stock markets always tend to look forward and not back. So they're not going to dwell. The stock price is not going to dwell on December's issues. However, looking forward is the bigger problem. United has created a large number of discontented travelers this winter. This discontent, I don't think it's caused so much by the cancellations. I mean, I got caught up in both the December storms and detailed those experiences in Travel Commons number 49 and number 50. Yeah, you know, the cancellations were annoying. They were an inconvenience. But quite honestly, I mean, they were understandable. I mean, after my San Francisco to Denver flight was canceled, I watched the live shots of the Denver blizzard while waiting for my next flight. I'll tell you, that cancellation made perfect sense to me. No, it's some of the decisions United made around those cancellations. The front page of USA Today 2 weeks ago greeted hotel guests and frequent travelers with the story of how, during that Denver blizzard, United Express diverted two flights to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then left the passengers there. Abandoned, said the headline. United Express flew their flight crews and jets, empty jets, out of Cheyenne the next morning, leaving the passengers to find their own way to Denver. And then this Thursday, on the front page of the Chicago Tribune business section, under the headline, Tempers Fly, Plane Doesn't, a graphic timeline of a United O'Hare to San Francisco flight that sat on the runway for 8 hours before finally being canceled. And this after the uproar around JetBlue's winter meltdown. And you know, even though I wasn't one of those abandoned in Wyoming or on an O'Hare runway, you start thinking, am I going to be caught the next time a United employee makes a boneheaded decision? And it doesn't even have to be something this big. Leo Vigoda sent in this audio feedback about a seemingly minor United snafu that could have caused him some major difficulties.
Hi, Mark. It's Leo calling from Amsterdam. I have a comment about dropping photo ID checks when boarding flights and poor on-the-ground customer service. Last Saturday, I took United Flight 946 from LAX to Amsterdam via Washington Dulles. While waiting to board on the domestic leg of the journey, there was a PA stating that United no longer check photo ID for domestic flights, and indeed, no one asked me for my passport when I boarded. I fully expected to have to show my passport when boarding the plane at Dulles, as it was an international flight, but there was no passport check. None of the people boarding ahead of me were asked to show any ID, and nor was I. They just wanted to see the boarding card and didn't even take the I-94 departure record in my passport. This could make readmittance on a subsequent visit less than smooth. Yesterday I called United's customer service number, and no one there would admit to being able to help me. They gave me a number that they claimed belonged to US Immigration Service, but actually turned out to belong to a salesman at GE Consumer Finance. In the end, I found out the address to send the departure record back to the relevant people in Kentucky. I'm not sure if United have implemented a policy of not checking passports on boarding to speed things up, and I'm not sure whether they have a legal requirement to check passports on boarding. There is probably no security value in the passport check, but there is a benefit to collecting the I-94 departure records of foreign visitors. All of this makes me think that the people who design United's procedures probably don't do much international travel themselves, because if they did, they'd surely realize that this change caused a problem to about half the people on that flight. It's not all about cabin service and boarding times. This is something that I think most airlines don't seem to realize. Poor groundside service can leave an even worse memory than poor service in the air.
Of course, United isn't alone in this. The U.S. Department of Transportation is investigating American Airlines' December 29th San Francisco to Dallas flight. It was abandoned for 8 hours after it was diverted to Austin, Texas, due to thunderstorms. And, of course, JetBlue's recent service meltdown on JFK is well documented. But look how they responded. JetBlue's CEO goes on to every news show, including Letterman. Wow, there you go. There's some guts. Takes a beating from the outraged newsies. gives a heartfelt mea culpa each time after being kicked in the teeth, and then offers a service guarantee that itself has some significant financial teeth, far and above anything that folks are waving their arms around in Congress. United and American? Well, United didn't do anything for the passengers at Abandon in Cheyenne, didn't pick up hotels, wouldn't even transfer tickets over to airlines that were still flying. Didn't, that is, until they found out that they were going to be on the cover of USA Today. Then they decided to pay the hotel and meal bills. But did we hear from Glenn Tilton, the United CEO, who pocketed $115 million in stock last year when the airline finally made it out of Chapter 11? Nope, did not see Glenn. Now, wouldn't expect Glenn to do Letterman, but I mean, Glenn didn't even do the Today Show. Nope, just some faceless spokesperson rolled out. Same thing this week after the 8-hour stranding in Chicago. The quote came, "We apologize for the length of time one of our flights was on hold with passengers on board." Well, that parsed it. They parsed that one pretty tight. You know, quite a different sentiment than the February 22nd blog entry from JetBlue CEO David Neeleman. He said, "We are sorry and embarrassed, but most of all, we are deeply sorry." Not a lot of hiding, not a lot of word parsing there. JetBlue gets it. They understand that they broke the trust and they're looking forward. They're working hard to make sure that they don't make that mistake again. United, they're just trying to limit yesterday's damage. Seems like the only forward-looking thing they're working on is their CEO's next bonus payout. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is travel tech, finding speed on the road. In our last episode, I talked about how I upgraded most of my travel technology kit, my laptop, my iPod, my mobile phone. I passed my Motorola Razr down to my son Andrew and picked up a new Samsung A707, which Singular is calling their Sync phone. I really like it. Nice big screen, great camera, which, quite honestly, I use more often than not to take pictures of whiteboards that we've filled with brilliant, insightful thoughts, only then later to discover that it doesn't have a print button and nobody feels like copying everything down. However, the biggest selling point, at least from Singular's standpoint, fast data access on their 3G network, I just hadn't found a use for until a couple of weeks ago when I found myself at a financial services client with a completely locked down computer network. VPN access? Let me tell you, we were afraid that just plugging into a spare Ethernet jack would instantly result in the IT security police rappelling down through the drop ceiling tiles above us. We managed for a while on Blackberries and thumb drives, but eventually we needed to exchange files with the outside world. Now, we had two choices: get in the car and drive through the snow to Starbucks, or I could try and figure out how to turn my shiny new 3G Samsung phone into a cellular modem. Well, after about an hour of jacking around, I managed to cobble together a 3G data connection using a copy of Samsung's PC Studio and an old Bluetooth USB dongle that I had in my bag that I used to use to pull pictures off of my Razr. Well, I'll tell you, this sort of MacGyver rig actually did pretty well. Gave me 328 kilobits down and 234 kilobits up, according to the speakeasy.net test, faster than some hotel Wi-Fi spots I've tested and talked about in previous podcasts. I would have probably gotten something even faster if Samsung had used a standard mini USB port like the Razr instead of some wacky proprietary power/headphone/data port connection that they use to charge you another $30 for a non-standard proprietary data cable. Well, I had signed up for the $20 unlimited data package at Singular when I got this phone, and a good thing, because since I was now our only link to the internet, I was pumping four people's worth of data through my phone. But what about using something like this to replace the ubiquitous $10 a night internet charge at Marriott's and Sheraton's. Well, it got me to thinking, and I'll tell you what, doesn't take high school calculus to figure out that it's a no-brainer for me. I mean, two nights and boom, I'm paid for. I mean, the bandwidth may not be great, but I'm only looking to sync Outlook, not stream certain kinds of videos. Anyhow, but I may be in the gray zone, though, as far as Singular is concerned. My $20 data plan is probably intended just for phone browsing, and I actually did download the Opera Mini browser onto that Samsung, which is a damn sight better than the Singular web browser built in. But anyhow, they're probably just, you know, that $20, they're just probably thinking people are going to use it for, you know, phone browsing and watching the CNN snippets on their Singular video service that they tout. I mean, the same plan from Singular for a BlackBerry or a Samsung Blackjack is $50. It's $60 for a laptop card, same as Sprint's mobile broadband service. Now that, I mean, that's six nights a month. You know, quite honestly, even that's easy to cost justify if you're a frequent traveler. Putting six nights in a hotel a month is easy. And then especially, that's just from the avoiding the hotel stays. That's, you know, it even gets better than if you throw in avoided airport Wi-Fi costs. I mean, it's twice as much as the $30 monthly T-Mobile hotspot Wi-Fi subscription. But I'll tell you, if you factor in all the Starbucks drinks you'll consume while using the T-Mobile service, the real number is probably not too far off the Singular numbers. You know, all this would just be for naught, though, just some sort of tech hype noodling that we've seen in all sorts of magazines, if the coverage wasn't there. However, I continue to be pleasantly surprised with the 3G coverage. In every city I have, in the main cities, I've managed to nail up pretty stable 3G connections, even pretty much far out into the suburbs. I've been pleasantly surprised. And though I'm not sure that replacing overpriced hotel bandwidth is the type of killer app that led almost every European wireless carrier to go into near bankruptcy buying 3G licenses during the bubble years, it'll have to do, at least until they start streaming some more interesting videos. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 52. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. I'm not sure if I'll get another episode in before I head down to Cape Town, South Africa for spring break at the end of March, but starting to think through that and starting to get ready for that. I pulled one of my old tricks that I've talked about a couple of podcasts ago, using Skype out to call and set up some safaris over outside of Port Elizabeth. So really starting to look forward to that. The bridge music on today's show is again from Magnatune, the We Are Not Evil label. The songs Give You Up by Yangen, the Fado song Going on a River by Anamar, and Look Around by Very Large Array. I love those names. They're all available at magnatune.com. Check out the show notes for links. Hey, also take a look at the logo in iTunes for this podcast. Got a special badge done by my son Andrew. So check that out if you get a chance. And if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS. At travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, audio file, and post comments on the website. And until the next time we talk, whether it's this month or after I get back from South Africa, thanks again for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now. Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing that needs my mind, the one woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,